Good evening, good evening. Usually I'm coming to you in the morning. Today I'm coming to you in the evening. And normally you join me on my morning commute. However, this evening I'm going to be doing something a little bit different. This week I didn't really have time to record on the way to school because I was driving like a madman because I was late and I didn't want to kill myself. So today I'm going to be bringing you a small piece about the immigration talk that's been going on in the country. Something that's been developing over the week, and I kind of figured I'd give a little history on it, give kind of a little bit of the two sides of what's going on, and then just kind of let you guys decide with maybe a couple of my opinions sprinkled in. So, and I will let you know when it's my opinion, so you're not thinking, was that Drew, or is he just talking out of his ass? So, the first thing I'd like to say, or do anyways, is kind of set the stage a little bit of this whole immigration issue. It's been an issue for a long time. People coming over the border in large numbers and kind of figuring the way around our immigration policies. And some of it is, you know, they're actually legitimately trying to get out of a bad situation that they're in. And some of it is, you know, almost all of it is they have better opportunities here in America and they want to follow those. And that part, you know, it's like, I get it. You know, if I was in Mexico and I had limited options for work, I had limited options to supply my family with food, and give my family the life that I wanted to give them, I'd probably try and get into America too. And, you know, if I had to sit on a wait list to get in for 7 years, well, I might try and roll the dice. You know, what's the worst that happens? Is that I end up where I currently am, right? So, yeah, I'd like to keep that in mind, kind of put yourself in their shoes. What would you do if you're trying to, you know, provide for your family, you know, just like you do here? On the flip side of the coin, you could say, well, I am trying to provide for my family here, and it makes it a lot harder when they're in jobs. Now, statistics don't show that the people that are immigrating from Mexico are taking any jobs. So that's something to keep in mind. The jobs that they are doing are not jobs that people in America are applying for, to be frank. Jose is not taking Mike's job. It's not happening because Mike doesn't want to do that shit. And Jose will do that all day long in 95 degree weather and he'll ask his boss for overtime. So, yeah, I mean, there's kind of a little bit of the very, very broad sense of what's happening with immigration. To get a little bit more background, a little bit more detail, there was an immigration law put into place. Basically, if someone crosses the border illegally and is caught, it is a federal offense. They are detained, and then they have a trial, and then eventually they get deported. And what was happening is within that law, there was a sort of exemption or an immunity almost for people that were coming over with children. So they were allowed to essentially just go back. Is what I'm gathering from the sources that I'm reading, and it was kind of a huge advantage for them, or at least they were able to stay for a certain amount of time, if they had children with them. And the number of people that were crossing the border with children, according to Jeff Sessions, jumped in 1 year from 15 grand to 75. So that's a pretty significant jump, right? Obviously, I would agree, and I think most people would agree, okay, we probably should tweak this immigration plan to figure out how to fix that problem, you know, to how to make sure that people aren't taking advantage of that little loophole. Okay, so fine. So their solution to that was just this, and known as, I can't remember exactly what it's called, but essentially is you're going to separate the children from the parents that have committed this federal offense. You're going to detain them if they have no other option, whether that option be, you know, like a brother or a different parent, maybe they came over with somebody else. Maybe their parents gave them to, whatever, Javier, and that was trying to get to America, and they're like, hey, I think that would be good for my children to try and take them. But if that's the case, their parents can actually come get them, or one of their relatives can come get them. And there's a certain list of people who are allowed to kind of come get them from the detainment center. There's a whole bunch of stuff on what has to be supplied in the detainment center. But there's a little bit of vagueness too. So basically it's like food and water. But then it says, it's weird, it says after that, that is appropriate, like food and water that is appropriate, or something like that, which leaves a little bit of like, what do you mean? Why don't you just say food and water? Or if you wanted to make sure, if you're trying to say like, we're going to give them not just like one like little chunk of rice or something, like just be more specific. I don't know. That was kind of odd to me. And then there's another part that says in medical care, or emergency medical care is what it actually says. And it doesn't dive in too much more to what that means. You know, is it just life-saving medical care? Or, you know, if somebody, falls and twists their ankle, do they have someone there that can fix that? Or if someone falls and kind of breaks their hand, is there a provider there that's able to splint it at least, or cast it? Or, I mean, if depending on if it's sad, if it's displaced or whatever, you know, making that that determination, first of all, and then second of all, setting it and then casting it. Just as an example, is that, does that count? Or do you, they're just like walking around with like a hand flapping around because there's no one to do that? Because it's not an emergency, you're not gonna die, like you're fine, you know, like rip some dirt on it and wait a couple days and we'll kick you back over the border and maybe you can go see a doctor there. Probably not though, because we're your parents here and, you know, we're gonna prosecute them. But anyways, so it was kind of odd reading that. And so there's a huge uproar about obviously separating these kids from their children. A lot of times these kids don't have a choice. They're, you know, following their parents, or they're following somebody else that their parents told them to follow to America. So, and particularly if it is their parents, how kind of harmful their psyche can be to be torn away from their parent, not knowing really what's going on as a young kid. Am I ever going to see my parent again? What's going to happen to me? Am I going to go, like, what is happening here? I mean, that's got to be very, very traumatic, and that's something that, you know, psychologists and psychiatrists have been talking about throughout the country, is how detrimental that can be to a child and how they can maybe never trust again, or at least it'll take a long time. You know, they're like, can't trust that anybody in their life is going to stay in their life because this happened to them when they're younger. So that's an element. And then recently, actually, I think yesterday, Donald Trump kind of reversed course a little bit and signed an executive order that pretty much fixed the problem. At least in my eyes. I mean, people definitely chime in if I'm completely off base, but basically said if you come into the country illegally, you get caught coming into the country illegally, you will be detained, you're going to be prosecuted, but you are allowed to stay with your family now. So they're not going to separate children from parents anymore. You can stay in the same place, which I think is good. I think that, myself, and you don't know a lot about me yet, this is the second episode, but I'm not a huge Donald Trump fan, but I think that's good. I think that the fact that he was at least able to be like, okay, well, let's make a change here. And I think part of that is just the giant backlash he got from the general public. Even some people that were supporting Trump were like, you know, yeah, this isn't right. We can't just separate kids from their families. That's wrong, detaining people for no reason. I guess there's a reason, obviously, they came to the country illegally, but detaining them, young kids that don't know what's going on, because their parents are trying to get into the country. There's also been an argument kind of floating around like, oh, a lot of these people are, you know, seeking asylum from somewhere, which I think is true in a lot of cases. But many of these people don't necessarily know the proper channels to seek asylum. So they're just trying to get in the United States as fast as they can to get away from what they're getting away from, whether it be the cartel or whether it be, you know, some situation that has them in jeopardy of their lives in jeopardy. But I don't think a lot of them know that there are stations that they can go seek asylum and wait in sort of protection, I guess. They can be detained in a certain location while they seek asylum together. The other thing is, I think part of it is, and this is totally my kind of take on it, is that, I'm not necessarily, especially when I'm running from like the cartel, right? Like, as a quick aside, did anybody see that there's like some tweets that this dude was just like calling out the head of one of the cartels in Mexico, just like tweeting at him, like told him where he was and everything, like, I'm afraid of you, and then just got lit up. I started on Barstool, so it's probably like super accurate. But I mean, yeah, apparently he's dead. I mean, he got filled with lead. I just don't get why you would call out the cartel. But let's just say him, right? Like, let's say he's like, oh boy, like, I really got myself in a jam here, and I have three kids and a wife. I don't know if I would trust the little detainment center they have to keep from the cartel getting to me, right? And maybe that's just because I've like seen a lot of crazy movies and documentaries about like the cartels and how ballsy they are. But I may also just opt to try and get in the country and get as far away from those crazy motherfuckers as I possibly can before they chop my head off and scoop my eyeballs out, you know, because that's really what you're looking at. They're big eyeball scoopers. I can't say that for sure, but I feel like that's what they'd be going after. They like dinner spoon to the face. So, I mean, I don't really blame them there if that's the reason that they're not going to asylum. And I don't, again, I don't know where the asylum is. I don't know how heavily defended it is, if it's really secure, if it's not secure, but I gotta imagine the cartel's able to get through whatever it is if they really want to kill somebody. So another thing is the president had members of angel families on immigration. Yeah, I mean, it's super sad, really heavy-handed. I mean, like, obviously, super sorry for their loss. It's terrible what happened to their kids. And I can't imagine that happening to anybody that I know. It's just so saying that first off. But it kind of reminds you know that, like, Sarah McLachlan commercial with, like, the shelter animals? And it's like, the hearts of an angel. Something like that. The wings of an angel. It's got like those crying dogs, you know, just like dog after dog that's just like looking through your soul, like, why do you hate me? Like quivering, you know. That's kind of what this article is, or this, not article, but this statement, and interview, I guess, what have you. And he lets one of the people that lost their son or their kids talk. I think Miss Wilkerson, this is what it is. So he invites her up, and she says, "Hey, I want to tell you a little bit about Josh. He was brutally tortured, strangled over and over, and he was set on fire after death. His last hours were brutal. As everyone's standing up here, none of our kids had a minute to say goodbye. We weren't lucky enough to be separated for 5 or 10 days, obviously alluding to the kids that are being detained. We were separated permanently. At any time we want to see or be close to our kids, we go to the cemetery because that's where they are. We can never speak to them. We can't Skype them. I want to thank you guys so much in this room." So all the people in this room right now are like ICE people and Border Patrol people, for doing what you're doing. You guys know the permanent separation. It's the media that won't share it with other people. It's permanent. We can never have them back on this earth. Thankfully, I'll see him again in heaven. So, I mean, that's like, booey. Whew. That really kind of takes the air out of the room, right? I mean, I definitely would hate to follow talking after that. So, yeah. I mean, that's pretty tough. And this is obviously. The issue is you can't just assume that every single person coming over the border is someone that's going to set your kid on fire. I mean, that type of fear mongering is a little much. At the same time, there is a little bit of truth to what they're saying about some criminals coming in. There's been, according to one of their statistics that I haven't fact-checked, there has been more than 250,000 criminal aliens that have been arrested and charged with over 600,000 criminal offenses. Okay, that's a lot. Now, what is a criminal offense? What are all those? Is the shoplifting in there? Probably. The other thing is, there's from a 2011 government report, there's 25,000 people that were arrested for homicide, 42,000 for robbery, and nearly 700,000 for sex offenses. So, not 700,000, 70,000, excuse me. So that's quite a bit of people, but compared to the general population, I don't know. I'm not sure. They don't give you that information, do they? Nah, they don't want you to know. So, anyways, that's kind of the situation. I like that he reversed course. I like that he changed what he originally, the issue that was going on. At least he had the kind of balls to do that. He was like, and I don't know if he was like, man, this is wrong. This isn't something we should be doing. Those kids, the poor kids. Or if he was like, oh my God, the Dems they're really getting on me. I really know what to do here. I'll just sign another executive order. Just give me my pen. Give me my pen. Kim, give me my pen. So, who knows? I like to give him the benefit of the doubt. Maybe he's really, has a little sliver of a heart. As long as you're a kid, a little grown boy that's below 18. If you're a girl above 18, look out. Watch out. Okay, that was a low blow. That was a low blow. I'm sorry. I'm sorry that I included that, but no, I'm not really sorry. I had to do it. So yeah, that's a little scoop on what's going on with immigration. I'm obviously not an immigration lawyer. I'm sure that there's major errors in some of the things that I'm saying, but for the most part, kind of gives you a broad look of what's going on in the two different sides. Always feel for the kids. Always feel for, families that are being torn apart. And the footage that you see is just terrible. You see Border Patrol people laughing while there's kids crying in the background. And I hate to get in the mind of one of those Border Patrol people that has to actually sit there at the detainment camp. Are they just cold-hearted? Are they really like, yeah, screw these Mexicans coming over here, and their kids are, they shouldn't have come over. These kids are, it's not our fault, or are they like, I just got to be slightly desensitized because this is my job and I have to like stay sane. I don't know. But I mean, I also think it kind of takes a certain kind of person to be a Border Patrol agent. I don't think there's a lot of people that are like signing up to be a Border Patrol agent that have like a super ton of compassion for the plight of the Mexican individual. Which maybe that's part of the issue, I don't know. So anyways, yeah, that's going on. Moving on to other topics. Another thing I wanted to get to today was just the NBA draft, Winners, losers. What does it mean? So number one, DeAndre Ayton, numero uno, to the Phoenix Suns. I think that's a pretty safe pick. Safe pick there for sure. And then we got number two. I think it was Nikola Jokic. No, I'm lying. That's not Nikola Jokic. It's who was number two? Man, it was the dude from Duke with the long hair. Gosh, what's his name? This is ridiculous. Marvin Bagley the third. That's who it is. So he went to the Kings. I think that's a good pick. Luka Doncic. He went to the Hawks, but he's going to get traded to the Mavs, who they're really hoping that he's he's the next Dirk. He's not gonna be. He's not near as good as Dirk. But I think he'll be a solid player. I think he'll put up, 10, 15 points a game. He'll get some boards. But he's no Dirk. And then Trey or Jaren Jackson from Michigan State, MSU boy. He went to the Memphis Grizzlies. Rest in peace, dear Jaren Jackson. We will never see you in a playoff game ever. And then there's Trae Young. And that's the whole swap that happened there. He went to the Mavs, but he's going to get traded to the Atlanta Hawks. I think the Atlanta Hawks, I think they did really good. I think they got a lot of good stuff. They got Trae Young, and I mean, Trae Young has the potential to be the next Steph Curry. I don't think he's going to be, but he has the potential to be, and I think that's why they picked him up. And the ever-changing NBA, where it's moved to three-pointers, man, he's got a lot of upside. And then I was surprised that Muhammad Bamba from Texas went so low. I mean, six isn't low. Don't get me wrong, but I would have picked him. Man, I would have picked him second. Really, I thought he was just such an impactful player. Anytime you got a guy that's that friggin' tall and that athletic, that can really alter shots, it makes it really tough. Especially for, again, a guard-dominated NBA. Right now, in my opinion, and there's a lot of slashers that get to the rim. And man, if you come face to face with Mohamed Bamba, he will tell you, no, go back to a 3-point line. You not come in here. I'll swat you every time. And I don't know how my accent always morphs whenever I try and do one, but yeah. So, and then the rest of them were kind of, what you would expect. Or actually, there's some more. Oh gosh, what's that guy's name? The dude from Missouri. He didn't go. Michael Porter Jr., he didn't go until way later. The Clippers shit the bed. I'm not gonna lie to you. They got Miles Bridges. Okay, that's a pretty good pick. But then they picked Jerome Robinson from Boston College when Michael Porter Jr. was still on the board. The fuck are you doing? Jerome Rob I don't even know who that is. Like, I had to look him up. It's like, who the heck is Jerome Robinson? It's like, in his like bio, it's just like he grew up a North Carolina fan, and then he went to Boston College. It's like they didn't even like give him any stats or anything. You like scroll down a little bit, there's stats, but it's just like that was like the number one thing about him. You know, if like that's your number one thing, is like he was a North Carolina fan. Who the fuck is this dude? So, yeah, anyways, that was, I thought, was just a real bed shitter there. Could add somebody that in Michael Porter Jr., who might not amount to anything, but he certainly has a bigger opportunity, or at least a bigger chance to be, a star in the NBA. Someone that you can maybe not build a franchise around, but that can be part, an integral piece of a really important franchise. So, yeah, that was the one thing I was really surprised by. Dante DiVincenzo. He went to Milwaukee. That was pretty cool. New Jersey Jordan. What up, Dante? I was thoroughly impressed with him, watching him in the championship game last year. He was just killing it. I mean, some of the shots he made were incredible, and I think he has a real opportunity to make a difference on the Bucks squad, joining up with Giannis, and I really hope their 3-point shooting out. Give him another option in the backcourt. Grayson Allen went to Utah. Who else we got? Moritz Wagner? Yeah, I think it's Wagner. He from Michigan. He went to Los Angeles. You'll probably like it out there, the big old goofy German. And then there's a couple other important players that went that got picked. Let me see. Since we're from Michigan, I guess I should probably hit on Detroit for a second. So Detroit got the 38th overall pick, Kyrie Thomas, and then Bruce Brown. So Brown is from Miami, kind of a defensive specialist almost. And so that should really, that should really help them. Because Detroit's always been like kind of prideful of their defense. That's kind of what we hang our hat on, and it was when we won the NBA championship, with Big Ben and all them. Detroit's just known for defense. So picking a defensive player, that makes sense, and then Kyrie Thompson should give us a little bit more offense. And I think I'm kind of hopeful for next year. If Reggie Jackson can stay healthy, Luke Kennard helped out our 3-point shooting significantly last year, even though, he's not a standout player by any means, but he certainly helped. We still got Blake Griffin. Stanley Johnson, you know. So yeah, we got, you know, obviously big ol' Andre down in the middle cleaning up the glass. You know, I think we're gonna make playoffs next year. I'm saying it right now. We're gonna make playoffs. So over under on DeAndre Ayton being the next standout all-star player in the NBA. I think there's a good chance. I think he's could be really good. I mean, his frame is just insane. His good ball handling skills. What I'm really looking forward to is when Shaq's son, Sharif, gets in the league. That boy's about to tear it up. He's got some handles. He's 6'10". Man, he dunks like Pops, but he's got crossover like, you know, AI. Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. So anyways, that kind of wraps up your little quick review of the NBA draft and a little bit of serious talk about immigration. Wow, we did that seamlessly. No, I probably got to work on my transitions, but that's all for now. Peace out.
Catch me, don't you? Catch me, don't you? Catch me, I've fallen in love for the first time. I wanna cry.
All right, what's up? I'm gonna leave you on that note. I wanna cry. No, I'm just kidding. So today, we got a real abbreviated podcast because I'm already halfway to school. But I just wanted to talk about real quick the indictment of the New York congressman and his son for insider trading. Yeah, he got caught. I mean, I feel like all of them are doing it. He just got caught. He's just stupid, you know. And here's a question I just wanted to pose to everybody. Would you, if you had an ability to, if you had the information, act on insider trading? Not gonna lie to you, I think I would. You know, if I have 500K invested and someone calls me and says, "Hey man, shit's about to go down. You need to dump all your stock." I think I might dump all my stock. I mean, I don't know about you guys, but I think it's kind of silly that if you don't have any sort of like you don't have a choice in the matter. Like you're just given that information. Like that information's dumped on you by someone or somehow, and you are just like not supposed to act on it. I think that's just like that's pretty tough. Like, nope, I know I'm gonna lose 500K, but I'm gonna sit here and not do it because it's insider trading. That's just like that's kind of silly to me. I feel like the only person that should be, maybe not for Congress people, but for the most part, the person that should bear the responsibility is the person that gave up the information, right? The person that works for a company and sells, you know, insider information to people. That's the person that should be indicted. And then obviously, if it's somebody that has a conflict of interest, they're holding some sort of office, yes, they should also be held to a higher standard than the rest of us. But in the case of this congressman, so he had been doing this for years. He was already under investigation for the same company for sort of insider trading deals. And then he gets this call from this pharmaceutical CEO and or emails, excuse me. And he's like, "Hey, this trial's about to go bad. You like this is not good." And the congressman was smart enough to at least not dump all of his stock. But he called his son, or he emailed his son, one of the two, I can't remember, and told his son like what was going on. No, he called him because they don't have like exactly what he said to his son. And his son just like dropped like crazy. Like right after this guy had gotten his emails, his son dropped like all of his stock, saved himself like 700K, something like that. And so now both him and his son are indicted for insider trading. And that's where I'm like, okay, yes to the congressman, yes to the dude, the CEO. And I, to a side note, I don't think the CEO is even going to get like in trouble, which is just stupid to me. He's the one that caused the whole issue, right? He's the one that gave up that information. He should be the one that's taking the punishment for it. But then his son is like, you know, he just kind of got this information dumped on him by his dad, and he's just supposed to sit there like, no, that's, like, nope, I'm going to lose 700K. That's fine. I guess in his situation, because you know that that's against the law, and you know your dad's under the investigation already, you probably should have just ate the 700K. But in any other situation where you don't think you're being, like, surveyed, I just, man, I mean, that's just hard to just sit there and know you're about to lose 700K. If you lose 700K in the, like, investment game and you had no idea it was going to happen, like, that's a risk that you were like, okay, I, like, I'm taking that risk. But knowing it's going to happen and then just having to sit there and be like, oh, man, just watch the stock just tank. Just knowing that you're losing all your money and that you could have done something about it, that's just, like, I feel like it's just kind of cruel. And now you're going to go to jail. So that sucks. I wonder if you get to keep the 700K, though. I don't even know that. If someone knows that, they should shout out. Like, do you know, if you get indicted for insider trading, are the your stocks still that you sold, that's still good? I would assume that's so. So maybe it's worth it. Maybe it's just like a calculated risk. Like, yo, I'm about to go to white collar jail for 5 years or 3 years with good behavior, and I saved myself $2 million. I'll take it. You know, that's good with me. Fine, I'll reinvest when I get out. I don't have to have a job or anything. It's not like he's like worried about employment, you know. His dad's at Congress, like, they're loaded as shit. He doesn't have to, like, go out there and be like, oh shit, I got indicted for this. I'm not gonna be able to get a job. I mean, maybe a little bit, but for the most part, I feel like that upper echelon of people have all been probably investigated for the same thing and or are doing the same thing, so it's not even going to deter them from hiring him anyways. But I just thought that was interesting. Didn't know what you guys thought about it. Yeah, it would be tough. It would be tough to take the straight and narrow path there. I think that would be a real test of someone's morality, you know, set them up. And the other thing was, I was wondering if, like, the FBI, maybe the reason the CEO isn't getting in trouble is because he kind of, like, rolled on the congressman. This is, like, totally speculation. But I could see the FBI being like, hey, you should contact this guy and tell him shit's going south and see what he does. And then we can, you know, we can see what he does. And if he makes a mistake, then we're able to, you know, indict him. That'd make for a great movie. I feel like I would love to watch that movie. But so yeah, in other news, LeBron James finally was seen in the entire Lakers uniform. You know, he has been officially a Laker, but I feel like he hasn't been until he, like, dons the entire uniform, you know. And I'm not gonna lie, he looked good. He looked like he belonged in the Lakers purple and gold. He's got the fresh shoes to go along with it. I'm looking forward to watching the Lakers this year, because nobody else thinks he got a chance at Golden State, but when you got LeBron on your team, anything is possible, you know. It's Black Jesus all day. So anyways, that's all we got today. Just a real quick, brief check-in, a little 8-minute, little seggy for you. Love you guys. Talk to you later.